Good afternoon, folks. I was supposed to be joined by another lady here, and unfortunately she is not able to make it, so we're going to get started. Welcome to EFF Track on Wire Tapping. We're pretty much going to cover some of the basic technology, how it's used, why it's used, who's using it, and then field questions from whatever you guys have. My name is Jeff Termasazen. I started working for a company beginning of this year processing financial data. Prior to that, I worked for a company called Verint, which did essentially surveillance. We recorded everything from this call may be monitored for quality assurance through to executing government warrants, both local, state, and federal levels. We covered airports like the three up in New York. We do all their video surveillance. We do most of, well, we did most of Home Depot and Lowe's and that sort of thing. Currently, I'm studying cybersecurity for my master's. So this is one of the things that are near and dear to my heart, and I like talking about it, I like things about it, and it's really fun and kind of scary at the same time. So yeah, that's pretty much wiretapping there. These days, probably the biggest thing we've got running right now is all the laws that they keep trying to pass. We've got senators who keep coming up with the same thing over and over again. We'll get to that in a future panel. Pretty much saying that we can do what we want and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And fortunately, folk like EFF and Wiki took up the take up the challenge every time, basically, and fight back and go like, no, yeah, you can't. This isn't going to work. Granted, it's for a lot more things than just wiretapping, but there's a number of wiretapping things under there just from the nature of the beast. I'm assuming most of you folk are working at companies. How many of you work with companies that are running Cisco phones? All right. If you ever get, how many of you who are running those Cisco phones have them routed through your PC or your PC's routed through your phone? All right. If you ever get a chance, download Wireshark or something and do a capture when you make a phone call. None of that stuff's encrypted. I've yet to see a company where their VoIP traffic is actually encrypted. And Wireshark came out with a plugin a couple years ago that specifically does VoIP. So go through, record the thing, save to WAV file, bang, you've got the conversation. Which is not really too much of a problem if you're using your own phone, but if you take a step out and you consider just how open your network could be, you could plug a point into anywhere you wanted to and record whatever's going across there. You get into one of the switch lines, you could absolutely have a ball as far as that goes, and fortunately Wireshark's smart enough now that you can do all the filtering you want, so you can break out your individual conversations. Now, most people, you're not really going to care if those things are being monitored, but there will be times when you will. Like with the lady who was here before, Courtney, imagine their phone calls being recorded. Imagine the judge is being tapped. And a lot of times, it doesn't need to be active. There are all kinds of horrible ways that the folk can get into the systems now and do the recording. I know one of our things were, when the old taps used to be, you have to go, most of you are old enough for this. In the 80s, remember the 80s movies always had the guy sitting outside on the telephone pole, the fake construction worker who's plugged in? All right, that's pretty much how the tapping used to be. And there's really no way around it. Now, you could tap at different points. You didn't have to go sit outside the person's house. You could do it from a central switch and whatnot, but you had to have some sort of active person there doing these things. Ever since VoIP came out, and with as predominant as it has become, with some very limited exceptions, I would say that at some point, pretty much all of your conversation that is made these days goes across a VoIP link at some point. And to tap that, you no longer need to actually be on site with any of these companies. You can have AT&T, you could have Sprint, whoever, simply tell them, hey, I want this data feed between these two folk, and they just stream you an they just send you IP packets to wherever your servers are sitting. Hopefully they should be asking for warrants, but I know that if it comes up high enough, they'll usually do it, especially if it's an ongoing thing. That depends on who's doing it. For example, BlackBerry, everything that happens on BlackBerry is encrypted. which is why it's so many, you know, so many business things. So you're fine there. Interestingly enough, they are actually currently working on ways to monitor that legally, where it'll actually be installed onto the phone.
We have questions. We want to watch
out. Okay. All right. Okay, if you guys raise your hand, raise it up high, because they're going to bring a mic out to you so you guys can get the questions recorded as well. Yeah, I know Saudi Arabia pretty much told BlackBerry, either give us your codes or we're kicking you out of the country. And I didn't really follow what happened with that, but I know that BlackBerry was very, very uptight about it. It's like, yeah, we're not giving any of this. And they're the only folks who are encrypting everything by default. I would imagine some of your other stuff is. Especially if they're sending it off to the government agencies. We never handled that part of it. We just got the unfiltered stuff. So that recorded great for us. But at least internally, and for the most part externally as well, especially just like residential areas, I'd be extremely surprised if they're encrypting anything at that level, simply because it's more overhead for them and no one really cares. You know, most people aren't able to hack into the residential lines, you know, at a VoIP level. So they're like, you know, this would be more trouble than it's worth for the individual company doing it. The more high-tech this stuff gets, definitely the scarier it gets. I know, again, going back to Cisco, just because I'm very familiar with them, they've actually got a function called the executive record, which pretty much turns any one of those mics into a live mic. So you don't actually have to pick up the phone. If they're configured correctly, you can actually send out a command and start recording off of any one of those mics for whoever's in the area. And you get the option of putting the little alert light on that says, hey, yes, we've turned on, you know, we're recording, no, we're not recording. Depending on who's doing what, it's very possible for an entire building to be mic'd just because of the phone system they're using there. Residentially, not too worried about the wiretapping side, mostly because the folk who are doing it, I'm actually not sure. Does anyone know if Skype's encrypted at the moment since they went to Microsoft?
It is still, but kind of they're switching stuff around and the room stuff's been broken in here.
Awesome. All right, so Skype is probably the most predominant commercial level application that's being used. And like you said, it's just been, you know, cracked there, so it shouldn't be too long before that gets done. Give me a mic.
Yeah, one of the things with Skype right now is, while the information may be hard to get right now, the IPs that are talking are not. And there are techniques right now where they get your IP and then they do other things to you to either disrupt you or get to your information that way. So any communication you send out, figure that somebody at some level is going to be able to get it if they want it bad enough.
And if it's going out sort of industrially, like across the networks, assume that it's being recorded. Most of the time, no one's actually going to care enough to use anything with it. But if it's not being recorded, it is so easy for one of these companies to do it that you're just safer assuming it's being recorded, even if no one ever uses it.
I'd also like to point out that Microsoft has been very tight-lipped about whether or not they do provide full-level encryption on Skype-to-Skype communications. Historically, they've always used AES-256, but even then, Skype has never been open about what procedures they use for encryption.
Which is, you know, kind of nice. You know, it makes it a lot harder for folks to go in and crack it when they're actually trying to decipher this stuff. I'd like to see more companies doing that sort of thing. It's like, yeah, we encrypt it. We're not going to tell you how we do it. But yeah, it would be really nice to see more companies do it. Who's got the mic now?
There's been a lot of discussion about, on a national level, about the FISA court and warrantless wiretaps.
Yeah.
Virtually none of those discussions specifically define what wiretapping is. It's my understanding that it's not wiretapping if it can be intercepted, recorded, and data mined. From a legal standpoint, it's only wiretapping if the computer kicks that out for human interpretation. Now, I have two questions. One, is that correct? And two, if it is correct, what is to prevent future generations of Watson-like supercomputers from employing human-like analysis, yet it not being wiretapping because a human's not looking at it?
We're actually just discussing that where Google got pinged by a judge. Was it federal level? Federal judge? For Google, for the, where they pinged them for doing
yes.
the Wi-Fi thing. Was it federal level?
Yeah, that was federal. Yeah.
All right. There's a case a while ago where Google dinged from doing when they're driving around for the Google Maps, and they were pinging Wi-Fi hotspots, and it was picking up all the residential stuff there. And the judge actually ruled that that was wiretapping. Even though it's out there in the public, anybody who walks by can do it, it was still like, yeah, because it's using specialized equipment, namely a packet sniffer, apparently, it's now a crime for you to go and do that. So if someone sets up like a Wi-Fi hotspot here, you know, if we set up one here, someone can, you know, be difficult about that if you start actually doing analysis of the traffic that's coming across there. So in that case, under that ruling, yeah, anything that they record, there's nothing they can't record. Because if they can essentially say, all right, I'm driving through a neighborhood, and if I'm doing any sort of like a Wi-Fi scan, that's now a federal crime, then it's all, you know, there's no more protection as far as that goes.
I have a comment.
Just a moment ago on the Skype thing, some countries and agencies do forensic challenges where they basically put out a set of, hey, can you break this, or can you try and do recovery on data? Several years back, they had several going on for Skype, but all those have disappeared within like the last 2 years, any competitions or entries for that type of stuff or questions, so take that as you will.
Yeah, it helps when, you know, you get Microsoft's lawyers behind you. You know, like she was pointing out, you've got like half a page of lawyer names, and like half of those are company names, not actually individual lawyers. Yeah, when you start getting into that level with that kind of money behind it, you can pretty much, you know, largely make your own laws. You know, it's still got to go through the court system, but stuff that was there, you know, they're paying lawyers a lot of money to find ways to either negate what's out there or to put something in to get things done their way. And that's actually a huge problem. I know she mentioned it as well, where the judges don't really know what's going on. It's a problem in Congress as well. I mean, I can't think of any of the, you know, 530 odd people in Congress who actually have a solid technical background. Yet these folk are writing all the legal laws. They have to rely on someone else to tell them, hey, here's what's going on. And most of the folk who are telling them those things are lobbyists. And most of those lobbyists have got no intention of giving them a fair and balanced answer because they're out for a particular outcome. So they're not gonna lie to them because, you know, if you're a lobbyist and you're lying to your the folk you're trying to sell something to, and they find out about it, you'll never hear from them again. But they will certainly give a biased version of whatever this person's looking for to get it done their particular way. So, you know, when you start reading through these things, and like she's saying, she gives it to her programmer friends to sort of read through rulings and whatnot, and they just start cracking up. It boils down to that the folk who are writing these things don't understand what they're writing, which means that they go to an outside source, and a lot of times that outside source will give them what their understanding of it is, but they rarely actually go to like a full-on programmer to go and get, hey, I'm writing this case here, I need you as a consultant, what's going on with this? It just takes them too long, and I think it's just too much effort for them to do it. And same thing with all of our wiretapping laws that are coming in now. You know, with the FISA ones you're mentioning over there, the government obviously wants as much power as it can get. Not necessarily for bad things, but it makes their job easier when someone actually does something bad. So they want it as wide open as possible that they can do whatever they want. Of course, with the old saying of all power corrupts, and an absolute power corrupts absolutely, eventually those things start using me for bad, which is why groups like EFF step up and go like, oh, hell no, we're not going to be doing this. You know, you may wind up passing this, but we're going to fight you every single step of the way. And this leads to all kinds of interesting cases. Just if you like, look at what's being argued. And unfortunately, you know, if you've got your really, really big companies who are trying to push for one particular thing, groups like the ACLU and EFF and whatnot, they really have an uphill battle at times to, you know, try and fight these major guys who've got like billions of dollars behind them. And the ones where they win, you should really take note of, because those wins are just amazing, because they've had to do it with usually a lot less resource than their opposition had, and they still win. So, you know, if you ever go on there and you're like feeling you like you want to donate, make those donations. They really, really do help these folk. And if it wasn't for groups like them, at this point, we'd pretty much be living in 1984, because the tech is out there right now. The problem we have with data is no longer the recording of it, but the analysis of it, which I think was you were alluding to with, you know, what happens when the computer can actually start, you know, understanding what they're going through now. For example, right now, one of the most common encryption methods is the triple DES. Everyone knows triple DES can be broken. The problem is that it takes such a long time to actually do it that it's not that it's secure simply because of how complex it is. At some point, that's going to become, you know, that'll be no longer a worry. So we're going to go with a whole new system of cryptography to, you know, try and beat what's coming up as far as on the tech side. And I know folk will be talking later on about like quantum computing and how those things work. And if that actually becomes mainstream, things like triple DES will be cracked in a matter of weeks, maybe months and stuff. But it won't be long before that stuff starts going, you know, the way of web. And it'd be really, really simple to do it. And if anyone here actually have any experience with wiretapping, either doing it or having it done to them, can we get the mic, please? Lady in green.
I actually received notification from the police that I am being wiretapped about a month or two ago. I haven't really researched it because I figured I was coming here and one of you smart people on the FF track will tell me what's going on. What exactly is happening? How are they even monitoring my communication? I mean, is it going to a computer and it's just being analyzed that way, or is someone actually listening to my conversations, or what?
Again, it depends how they're doing it, but most likely, so it's just simply being recorded. Where previously it used to be that, you know, someone had to be sitting there the whole time monitoring the little tape wheel that goes around or something, they can simply dump it to hard drive now and let the computer handle most of it. And then whenever they're looking for something, they can then go through and pull up that record and, you know, go through and see. So, for example, like let's say you're talking to your sister. All right, we don't care about that one, so we can just, you know, rule out a whole bunch of these things. All right, these are the conversations we want to listen to. From there, they can play them back. Depending on who's doing it, it can be any number of ways. If you like a lot of landline and cell phone to the same company, they're probably doing it like at the exchange, simply because at some point all your stuff's going to be routed to there. And with everything being IP now, once it gets onto the company networks, they can very easily say, all right, anything coming from this subscriber, make sure that it goes through this point. So that no matter where you're calling from, if they ever identify that it's you, it's going to eventually find its way to a particular point where they've got the recording set up. Again, and with most of the stuff not being encrypted, you know, it's not going to be, it's sitting in the open so that they can listen at any time. If you are doing something like BlackBerry, by default it's encrypted, but they've probably got the encryption routines from like BlackBerry as part of a subpoena system that they can say, all right, we need these conversations decrypted. How BlackBerry does it, I don't know. I doubt they're going to simply give out their encryption routines. They'll probably say, all right, we'll come out, we'll decrypt what you want to decrypt, and then, you know, we'll take our toys back again. I do know with Verint, we had suitcase cell towers, though I don't think that's anything they'd be using with you. That's normally for, like, drug busts and whatnot, when they, like, set up essentially a cell tower in a van right outside the car, which overwhelms the other cell signal and essentially becomes a pass-through. Any phone in that area will latch onto that one because it's a stronger signal, gives them the ability to record everything coming off of that tower and then pass it on to the next nearest tower. So the person being recorded never knows because they just get straight communication the whole time. But it allows companies to deploy a tap to pretty much wherever they want to deploy one, record whatever's happening for however long it's going to be recorded, and then go back and do analysis there. The voice analysis software is also coming on really, really well. I know when we were reporting for things like airlines and whatnot, there were actually trigger words that would automatically start enforced recordings and start sending emails. So if someone calls and calls on a bomb threat, which we did have a couple times, that call immediately sends a signal to start recording this call, and it starts sending out emails to all and sundry going, hey, we've just had a hit on one of these things, go find out what's going on. Now, sometimes there's someone being a smartass on the phone, in which case, you know, they get yelled at, but there have been times when it's been valid threats, and every once in a while we'll be called and go find an old call that got lost or something. And there have been a couple of times there we've gone back and said, we can't help you, one of your users deleted this call. And yeah, you're just SOL, sorry. The technology is really getting scary.
Your general question was, have you ever had experience being wiretapped? And I've had that myself. But at the time, I was living with an elderly lady,
mm-hmm.
and she was on the last remaining party line in the southeastern U.S. And she was 80 years old, and she was the youngest person on that party line, and all of them got together and refused to have the technology updated because it was so much cheaper. So I couldn't complain because I'm on a party line.
We went over there.
You just mentioned if anybody had any experience wiretapping. I worked for a telco company, not a major one, but a significantly larger one. And I was in the NOC. I wasn't a very high level person, but we used to get calls in from the FBI or various agencies. And after it was cleared through legal, we set it up so that if a particular number made a call or received a call, it was just routed through a special media relay. A media relay handles the VoIP traffic, the actual RTP audio stream. Just got routed through a special relay and
yep.
passed on to whatever agency wanted it. And I wasn't a very, the reason I shared is I wasn't a very high level person at the time. It was very simple to do. I mean, I could have trained my little sister to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And she can't type.
And it's designed to be simple because a lot of times the folk who are doing it are not the highly technical folk. It's, it's the folk who are manning the NOC, who are not going to be, network specialists or whatnot. Because a lot of time, while NOC folk can be very good, they can also be, this is their first job from would you like fries with that? So it's really, really simple to do that. I've got no idea what your guys' procedure was, but there are some that are really as simple as, type in the phone number, click a couple buttons, and that's it. Who do you write it to? Because they may already have pre-existing lines set up for, whoever's come into them before. So this is like the third request in the FBI over the past year. They go, all right, which is the FBI's line, and it knows exactly where to send it, how to route it, the whole kit and caboodle. And FBI just sits back there and goes, hey, look, we got a call last night. All right, let's go see what it says. So it's become very less labor intensive than it was. And I think you had mentioned it as well, that pretty much everything gets recorded now. Now, that may not strictly be true, but pretty much everything has the ability to be recorded these days. The real question there becomes is what can they do with it? And for the most part, they can't do a whole lot. Because there aren't warrants for it. And any decent defense lawyer would be like, well, why are we listening to this in the first place? So we've got it recorded, okay, there's nothing we can do about that. But what prompted you folk to start listening to these calls in the first place? Were you just like surfing around trying to find someone who did something bad because you had a slow day? In which case, we're going to get this thrown out. Or was there a link to something else? So the real worry on the wiretapping side is, at least from the government's point of view, is what can they do with this material? And unless you're actually doing something bad, for the most part, it'll be embarrassing because you're still going to have to fight it, you're still going to have to go to court, it still goes into public domain and whatnot, but you're usually going to get off without any worry as far as that goes, simply because they have to prove why were they listening to these particular calls to start with. All right, you and then...
Yeah, from an investigative perspective, you don't normally use a wiretap on like a phone line or anything until as a tool of last resort, just because of sheer amount of paperwork it requires.
Right.
Or rather go through your trash 100 times over before
right.
they consider doing a wiretap, because
well,
it's still labor intensive for, you have to have people manning it to listen to the calls on just on the voice lines, and then the paperwork process they need to get for the warrant and everything.
See, that's the thing, it's not so much anymore, at least on the tech side. the paperwork side is also becoming easier with like what is about FISA and stuff, where you can like make the recording first and get the permission afterwards, which is why, you know, EFF and folk are fighting that, because they really don't want that kind of situation. You know, if it comes up like the whole Minority Report movie issue, where you're basically being prosecuted before you actually commit a crime. So yeah, that if that ever happens, that's very, very bad. The paperwork is your biggest killer, though, because like he was mentioning, to actually set up the taps is like really simple these days. Unless you're like an old party line, which never actually hits an IP network at some point, yeah, then you still got to send out someone to go physically plug in wire somewhere to go make these calls and man the desk and listen to the whole thing going on. But unless there's like an active investigation that, you know, they're listening in on something, most of them simply get recorded and analyzed after the recordings, yeah. Yeah, he had a question.
It seems to me that a potential risk from this sort of thing is for lack of a better term, I'd call it a gray legal system, where you can get onto watch lists that cause you problems, and no one ever has to explain why. There isn't a clear procedure for getting off or challenging the fact that you're on such a list.
Right.
And a wiretap that wasn't necessarily authorized by a court could very well land you on something like that.
Yes.
And there's not really anything you can do about it.
Well, you wouldn't know about it till after, you know, someone came to your door and said, hey, you know what, we're here to, like, you know, arrest you or something. But again, that's where your defense folk come in. And the first thing they're going to be asking the cops is, all right, why? You know, I need a reason why you guys have arrested this person, or why you're this person under suspicion. And you have to show me that you got suspicious before you started the tap, or at least that's how it should be. In some cases, like with FISA stuff, they can actually do the recordings first and justify it after the fact later. And we don't want that to become a common thread, because, you know, once they sort of spread that to the general population, where it's like okay for them to do that to anyone versus specific individuals or specific groups, yeah, then we're pretty much screwed.
All right, I've enjoyed everything hearing so far, but I don't think I got an introduction. I don't know who you are.
I mentioned that first. I said okay. My name is Jeff Termasazen. I worked TermorsHuizen. Currently, I work for a financial company called ACI Worldwide, processing financial transactions and sort of doing security on that. Prior to that, I worked for a company called Verint, which did call monitoring. I worked for them for about 11 and a half years. And we recorded everything from the, you know, this call maybe monitored for quality assurance, through to executing taps for various law enforcement agencies. And we did video surveillance for things like airports, businesses, and whatnot. Yeah, the government at this point is something to be aware of, but they're not really horrible just yet. It can get horrible, which is why they're fighting it. But as far as tapping goes, you're really worried about your neighbors more, simply because while there's no real legal thing there, it's a whole lot more embarrassing. For example, how many of you here don't know that Prince Harry got pictures taken with his clothes off? All right. That would count as, you know, it's not exactly wiretapping, but it is surveillance. There's nothing really illegal about it, but yeah, it's way, way more embarrassing. Where it would become a problem for, you know, folk like us, is someone sitting outside, say, at a McDonald's or a Starbucks or something, and they launch something like AirCrack, and they run their own little hi-fi hotspot and route everything through there, and you're over there very happily exchanging naughty pictures with your girlfriend, yeah, they can suck all that off right off the air. Now, they don't know who you are, but, you know, and nothing really bad is going to happen to you, but it'd be damn embarrassing. You know, so that's really more of a worry at our level. Yeah, the government is fun and they definitely need to be watched, but they're not our major problem yet, as long as we keep them in check. So write to your senators, write to your congress folk, tell them, you know, oppose anything like this that comes up until it's been vetted by someone like ACLU or EFF. Petitions, don't do petitions, because when a congressional office gets a petition, they go, wonderful, we got 10,000 signatures, we're registering that as one complaint. Get those 10,000 people to individually send a message to the folk going, hey, we don't like this, because every one of those get registered individual. The only time that the petitions are good is when it's done by like a lobbying group, because they've got a lot more access directly to these folk, and they can go, hey, I've got 10,000 people here, I can go and tell, you know, two vote for you or two vote against you based on this. That they'll listen to. But most of the time, if you're like, you know, taking up like neighborhood petition or the online ones and things, they do get taken note of, but they usually get tagged as one protest against whatever, not however many are on the list.
You were talking about these things being sent over and, you know, maybe being picked up even though there's no particular target. They're just picking up information.
Right.
What is considered public domain? So they may print these things, these embarrassing things, because they're public domain. What is considered public domain, or do you know?
That's going to vary. A lawyer would definitely be a better person to answer that question. I do know that for the most part, if the person who takes the pictures gives permission, it's usually okay, depending on what's being taken. So, for example, anyone who's taking pictures outside of DragonCon here, if someone's published those pictures, they have to get the photographer's permission. If you're in an enclosed environment where you're taking pictures of like a model or something along those lines, you need both the photographer's consent as well as the model's consent for the, you know, the release forms. That would not be considered public domain.
One of the bases for what's, you know, public domain or not is whether there's a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Right.
If there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, then it's considered the public domain. Here, you're walking around in the rooms, the halls, there's no expectation of privacy because it's in a public area. But if you're in your hotel room, you're expecting some kind of privacy, so therefore it would be, you know, that's generally the, you know, the easy benchmark method to tell.
Is there anything left of the public expectation of privacy?
A lot of times, yes. I know Alpharetta here, I don't know if it's still active or not, but they actually had a thing, they put up some traffic cams. They were like taking, you know, pictures, I don't know if it was just speeding or just running red lights. And they got a lot of challenges against that. Basically, the person saying, hey, I'm sitting in my car. You know, I have expectation of privacy that I'm not going to get a picture taken here. And it was actually upheld, where it was like, all right, if you get a picture and you challenge, if you don't challenge it, we're going to fine you. If you do challenge it, though, we'll toss it out. But I don't know if that's still in effect or not.
That's not
in effect. Well, again, that was municipal level. It wasn't even Georgia or Atlanta. It was like specifically Alpharetta. And I know, for example, you'll see photography policies in the big things, especially, and I think Hyatt's probably got the best one posted. It's essentially no photography between 8 and midnight. So even though it's in a public area, there's no expectation of privacy, the hotel is enforcing a policy because, you know, they've got guests who aren't with DragonCon who may not want their pictures taken. So you may still be restricted in where you can take pictures, even though it's public, based on who controls that space.
I have a bit of a question. Our group is building a sort of a hobby UAV, and we're exploring ways we can enhance UAV by monitoring photographs, local communications such as Wi-Fi and ham radio and such. We're still dialoguing what legally we can monitor, because I know we had discussed doing Wi-Fi monitoring with it, and the whole Google Street View controversy comes to mind at first, and
right.
I'm unclear if we do anything with that, would we be held legally liable, or if there's just no way for us to work around that?
If someone takes offense to it, you'll probably get sued with it. A win is a whole other matter. But for example, if someone's tanning naked in their backyard and it's a fence then, the court's probably going to rule they've got an expectation of privacy because there is a fence around, and you flying over it and taking pictures is a violation of that. Again, it's depending on who it depends on what the issue is. You know, if you take 1,000 pictures of naked people sunbathing and no one complains, no one's going to care. But, you know, if even one of them kick up a fuss, then you can get all kinds of grief like that. So definitely get a hold of a lawyer to help you with that one there.
That's a pretty thoughtless to word writing, really, if you're just going around looking at the...
Well, we're not actually going to try to connect
the... That's very anodless to word writing.
So would that be illegal to use
still need to speak to the lawyer about that. Probably be on the safe side.
Okay.
There's lots of clarity there.
On a commercial standpoint, I specifically with the more obscure large data farms, how feasible is it that these larger corporations that are generally beyond just the common, we're looking at all of these companies as potentially what they're doing illegally to provide their services with these large data farms, how feasible is it that they're using these methodologies and techniques to obtain this information on a larger scale?
It's very feasible. Whether they're actually doing it is something else. It also depends on who's actually mining that particular information. Just because a particular place warehouses it doesn't actually mean they're doing anything with it. They could literally just be a repository for other companies who store their data there and who run their own analysis on it. I know in California a couple years ago there was a big fuss because the credit cards were selling voter lists to campaigns based on purchases. You know, so it's like, all right, we got 1,000 people here who are buying guns. They're probably going to be Republicans. All right, we'll sell you those 1,000 names so you can contact them. And, you know, all right, we got these folk over here who are all buying peace signs. They're probably going to be, you know, liberals. All right, we'll sell you those things there so you can contact them. And that was based on analyzing buying patterns. And I know Target had the same thing where they were actually notifying people that they were pregnant sometimes before they had told their spouse, because they found out that a lot of folks are pregnant by certain things at certain times. Like if suddenly someone starts buying, you know, multivitamins and, you know, this kind of thing, all right, odds are she's pregnant, she's starting to look after herself then. So what they do is they send out a packet saying, hey, you know, congratulations on the great news, here are some discounts for you. Because they figured, they found out that if you can get someone to start buying at that point, they'll buy throughout the whole thing for you. So they send these things out. And then a couple people hadn't told whoever they were with that they were pregnant. And the person goes and says, like, hey, you got this letter. You got something to tell me? And they're like, well, yeah. So Target got sued and they got around that, which is now why you get basically those things that are like packed like half inch thick of flyers and whatnot. Because they're like, well, we're just going to send you a whole bunch of these things, and a few of those will be something to do with babies. But we'll send you a whole bunch of other ones as well to sort of obfuscate that. So in this case, the analysis is still going on. You know, they're still tracking who's buying what. But they've just got around the actual, like, hey, congratulations, you're having a baby thing by essentially padding out what they're doing. They still get their end result because you'll still go buy from them. But, you know, they're no longer getting sued for it.
Yeah, I've been somewhat concerned lately about the possibility as to whether the government is tracking our movements with our tags and all these traffic cameras.
Yes.
Well, they
are. Yes. That's not a concern, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Yep. Damn, what's that thing called? There's actually a program right now out that has come under some fire about that because they're essentially using the CCTV feeds and whatnot to track.
They put that in place in private cameras with the police system.
Exactly. And, you know, so banks and at first, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was like, yeah, this is just movie and science fiction. But now, because more and more things are going IP and these things are being centralized, because a lot of times individual companies don't have the resources to do the monitoring themselves, so they'll hire a company to actually come and do it. So if you've got, for example, Verint, who's, let's say they get the contract to do all the Home Depots. Fantastic. If there's a crime at the Home Depot, cops don't have to go to the Home Depot anymore. They just go to Verint and go like, hey, we had a problem with the crime over here. Here's our search warrant. We need to see the, you know, data feed for, you know, this time period for this store. Verint goes, awesome. There's the data. Here's the video. You know, what do you want? So, yeah, that's definitely becoming an issue where they can track you. GPS in your phone is starting to help them triangulate on things like that as well, because, you know, they can follow, you know, where you are going. I know the companies say, like Apple, say they're not tracking that thing on a regular basis, but I don't think they've fully disabled that yet. And plus, which if you simply turn it on, well, you've turned it on. Right, but
you know, they tell you that in the contract.
Yeah.
And they use that in 10 records.
Okay, after him, we've got one person at the back there as well.
So Variance, wonderful software, allows you to do, allows you to write absolutely fantastically complicated DSP stuff that runs faster than I ever thought possible when I did my fudge of DSP stuff way back in the day. You've got some brilliant guys there. With Hadoop coming online, how worried are you that the companies like Variant are going to be a dime a dozen?
Not too, simply because they've got patents and they enforce those patents very, very strongly. And also the bigger companies start buying up the smaller companies. So a lot of times they don't really care what this company does, but this company's got like two patents that they want. So like the company itself is effectively worthless. They've got no interest in that company. They just want those patents. So they give them some ungodly amount of money to get those because, you know, once they have them, no one else can touch them. If anyone else comes into the market, they then have to either license through them or get sued for it or come up with a completely new way of doing this. So yeah, the bigger it grows, the harder it is for startup companies to get into it just because of that.
Just one comment about Target. It was actually a father got notified that his daughter was pregnant, a teenage daughter. So
there
it was
you
scary.
Go.
And also with the license plate tracking, that information is also available via information requests. So you can apply to find out where the mayor was or where all the times his license plate got scanned for a certain amount of time. And they're worried about that also happening with ex-wives, stalkers, lovers, and all this other stuff. So it's...
Well,
it's worse
I know.
Than that because it's available publicly.
Yep. Toll gates, for example, all record their data, and a lot of divorce lawyers have started using GPS tracking and things like toll gate recordings, like little Georgia Pass, that automatically beeps you through. They start using that to track. All right. Well, you say you were at this point, but you know we've got a thing that says you were over here because you went through, and that thing got tagged. So yeah, it's being tracked is something that is happening.
Yeah, I've had to do a lot of video conversions for like private side entities, basically their CCTV surveillance systems, and a lot of them are still running like one of 300 different possible codecs. So right now it's a limitation on technological infrastructure from everything being hooked up.
Yeah.
A lot of the places might have cameras capable of doing high resolution, but they're recording like an intersection or store entrance at 360p, which is not going to give you too many details, so you don't have to worry about that too much.
Right.
And especially as the codecs and everything, because of storage constraints. But a lot of them are starting to go towards more of H.264 systems, and that allows them to store more data at a higher resolution or anything. So as the years go on, that's going to be a lot more prevalent. Right now, it's not too much of an issue for the private side because they're such a jumble systems everywhere, but stuff has become more standardized over the last several years. That's definitely going to be a lot more prevalent over the next 5 to 10.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because... You know, you've kind of got to look around to buy a non-HD camera these days. You know, 10 years ago, you know, putting in a video system for your home was, you know, something the very rich did. You know, now you can walk into Fry's and walk out $200 and you've got, you know, four cameras and a recorder. Not very good cameras, but they're cameras.
And it's a pain to convert to. You need specialized software and everything to do that and trying to work it into another system to convert it to.
Right. See, and that's kind of where the startup companies come in, where they go like, all right, we're going to take like an open source codec and then encrypt it.
That's what some of them do.
And then it's like, all right, if you want this stuff decrypted, you're going to have to pay us to get it. So it's great. We make money for you, the front end, by selling this stuff. And if you ever actually need it, we make money off of you by selling you basically to get your video back in a system that's not in our system that you can like export it to like a DVD or a CD or something.
Yeah, you have to jerry-rig it through a plain playback system, basically.
Right.
Manually that way, and just you do it on
an automatic
basis half the time for that type of conversion.
Yeah. Then you.
Yes, you've mentioned wireline, wiretapping, and wireless wiretapping. Do you have any comment about text messaging and availability of that?
Exactly the same thing. It's still going out across wireless. I don't think there's very much wire texting that's going on. But yeah, it's essentially the same thing. And unless it's BlackBerry or unless you've got a really super expensive phone that's got built-in encryption, yeah, it's going out plain text.
But the guy on the other end is not on a BlackBerry. That doesn't protect you just because you have a BlackBerry.
Right, but what happens there is once it leaves the BlackBerry system, it gets decrypted. So yeah, BlackBerry realizes, all right, you're leaving our system now. we can't send this over anymore, so you know, we'll decrypt it so it can go through the public domain, so you on AT&T can get it unencrypted. The encryption only lasts while you're actually on the BlackBerry's network. Once it goes out, they decrypt for you, so if, you know, so other folk can see it.
Next comment here.
I'm curious as to what the state of the legal world is when it comes to data mining things that, taken individually, wouldn't be an invasion of privacy. For example, a photograph of someone's car in a public place, but taken as an aggregate, you know, 1,000 photographs of that person's car in various public places showing exactly where they've gone for the past month. What is the legal status of information like that with regard to an expectation of privacy? Is there one?
Again, we'd have to check with a lawyer, but I would imagine no, barring something like stalking laws. Because if you're actually taking pictures, it means you're following this person around. So you might not get them on a privacy thing, but you might get them on a stalking, you know, case. Now, if they're doing something like GPS, all right, that's a whole other thing, because you've got a whole bunch of data, but it's all coming from one place at that point. You're not actually, you know, going around and taking all these individual pictures of the people.
But if you're a company, you're not stalking an individual. You're collecting all this data if you're Google, and you've got your street view cars.
Yeah, that one would have to refer to a lawyer on, because, yeah, that can get complicated very quickly.
Next comment was over here.
Yeah, he had, actually, you had one too.
I was just going to say that the BlackBerry system, unless you're explicitly staying within it, is obviously not going to protect you. If you send a BlackBerry SMS to another BlackBerry, it leaves the BlackBerry system to go to the SMS network.
And as far as the comment about low resolution, there's a lot of stuff out there that's low resolution, so you don't have to worry. There's a lot of public domain research that allows you to fuse resolution over time. So as a person walks, you get different views, and you can fuse based on a simple transform there to get a much higher resolution image. That used to drive me nuts when I saw it, then I figured, but it's actually there. So
yeah.
Next comments here.
So a few minutes ago, you talked about the toll booths.
Right.
And sort of in the same breath, you talked about the cameras in the toll booths and the and like an Easy Pass or whatever, Georgia M-Tag or whatever it
right.
is.
Right.
You mentioned divorce lawyers, so I'm wondering if you mean that they're looking over, like, a spouse's records. I'm wondering if that's actually any different than looking over a credit card to see if I bought gas in New Jersey when I said I was in Georgia.
No. It's okay. The same thing. It depends on the individual state in question. So, for example, if the car's in both your names, they don't actually need to tell you because they've got the other person's permission. Same thing with...
But are they subpoenaing records, or is it just looking at the receipt, you know, looking at the bill that comes in the mail?
It can be either. You know, if you've got the bill coming in the mail and it gives you what you want, that's all that you need. If you need to go further, you know, then you can actually approach, you know, the Georgia Toll Group and go, hey, you know, I need this information. I'm a lawyer. This is the case. You know, here's the subpoena and whatnot. And they'll go, like, all right, there's your data. They're covered on that side there.
Interesting.
Just want to point out that both Georgia and New Jersey both use the same packet systems for their toll passes.
Yeah, so if it's something that you'd actually have to go apply for one here, and you have to go apply to New Jersey separately for theirs. And I know for if you're tapping, like let's say you suspect your spouse of cheating and whatnot, if you have someone tap them, that's illegal. If you are a part of that conversation, though, you can record that thing to your heart's content. It doesn't matter where you are. This is not for Georgia only. If you're in Georgia and you consent to being recorded, it doesn't matter if anyone else consents to it or not, because we're a single-party consent state. Other places are dual consent, so you have to have both sides. I know Washington State, for example, all those calls, hey, this call may be monitored, they can request, do not record this call, and the company has to stop recording. So you can actually actively say, do not record this. And if they record it, then you can actually, you know, say, all right, you know.
You used to be able to check that by the phone book, because if you have your local phone company, there's a little tag there, like when you call customer service, it says, you know, they say this call may be recorded. they have in print that they do that, and they state what the law is in your region for that type of taping.
There you go.
You mentioned about triple DES. The presumption is if the parties for whom that was important ever felt it was vulnerable, they would then adopt something beyond that. James Bamford wrote an article recently where he discussed a gigantic data center the NSA is building in Utah with possibly the ability to record petabytes of data under the assumption that if 5 years or 8 years from now if they develop quantum computers to break that, then not just from that point forward would your data be at risk, but anything that it had recorded over the last X years.
Yep.
Do you think that's a concern?
Yep. I don't know if it'll be in the next 5 years or so, but yeah, I mean, because once it's recorded, you can keep the data as long as you want to keep the data. And once you get computers fast enough to break triple DES in a reasonable amount of time, yeah, they can go through. The downside to that, though, is that, great, they're getting petabytes and petabytes of data. How long does it take to actually sift through that many petabytes of data when they're recording that much more every day? So it essentially comes down to the issue of not can they record, not can they see what was going on, but is it worth their while? Because the folk who are actually doing bad things are, yeah, actively using every bit of encryption they can. And so even though, you may be able to crack these codes now in a reasonable amount of time, you don't really care about the person who's cheating on his wife. You know, you want to go after your crime lords, drug lords, that sort of thing. At least for a while, it's going to be a question of, all right, cool. It'll be a question of they seem to have the resources to process that much information in a reasonable time on a general level. And he actually just brought me a thing. It says the 12 states are currently require all parties. And it's like California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland. All other states and the District of Columbia are not listed above, only require one party consent. The only thing you can't do is authorize a tap for someone or for a call you are not a part of.
Okay, I know there's a lot of people a lot anxious to comment, but if you
this
record...
This guy's also his hand up for a while when you get a chance.
Right, but,
yeah, but it's one, two, three, and then him.
As well, if it crosses a state line, then it becomes a federal matter, and a federal matter is also single party consent.
Okay, so stay on the mic, people.
I was just going to comment that the federal government has been working on phasing out triple DES and moving towards AES. So I think you can pretty much assume that if they care enough, they can crack triple DES in a
reasonable time. Folk now know triple DES is crackable. The problem is it takes so long that by the time you've cracked it, the information is no longer of any value. You know, I mean, for example, we use triple DES to encrypt financial information like PIN blocks and whatnot. So granted, you can crack a thing in 6 months, but or a year or whatever it is, but odds are by that point, you've lost track of who that person is. In that sort of situation, you need an immediate result for it to be worthwhile.
I'm from California, and there's a suburb of San Francisco where... a group of folks were trying to get the stoplight cameras banned from using to track you where you were going, and they kept sending letters to their mayor, to the congressman, nothing was happening. And then a nice group of hacker folks sent a packet to the mayor of one of these small towns, and the mayor got caught cheating on his wife. And so he has passed legislation that in that town they are absolutely not used against you, and he started getting it through all the different suburbs and different areas. So if you can promote it to your local government officials in a nice legal way, then they can start taking action as well.
Yep.
Now, we used to print out the license plates of judges in Tennessee and put them on the back of our
and
cars.
Also, this guy in the black sauce had his hand up for a while when you get a chance.
Are you just resting now?
No, I'm good.
About the NSA Utah, real quick about that, I did hear that they were using that to break older MD5 and similar, the older encryption.
Right.
That we now can crack. But the thing I wanted to get your input on was in Georgia they're employing the license plate cameras on police vehicles and others. I've seen them on police cruisers on I-75.
Right.
There is some speculation that those images, they're what they're being used for is basically just to blip the computer on the dashboard of whether there's a warrant for that plate.
Right.
Do you have any comments on how those could be used for chains of those pictures being taken across multiple cruisers used for tracking vehicles?
They definitely, but I think it'll be pretty hard simply because with it being police to start with, getting hold of the information would be a whole lot harder.
It's actually been done. Similar cases have been done that in the UK where ANPR cameras, as they're called, automatic number plate recognition cameras, have been installed in police cars. They're even traffic and parking enforcement for the local councils for the last 6-8 years.
Yeah.
So they've been tracking them, and they can do composite pictures, including tracking and ping systems to the police control rooms to track vehicles.
Pretty much anything that can take a series of images can track you.
That information is available via public information request from this police department.
But for anyone? So I can go and like...
For anyone. It's public, because they're public domain.
So it's just like the stoplight.
This has nothing to do with wiretapping, but while we were having this discussion, it clicked in my head. What is the current legal status of using full disk encryption to protect your computer's contents and be able to not disclose what that key is under any consequence law?
Unless you've got a very limited number of things, they can force you or send you to jail. The limited ones, I don't know all of them, but for example, I do know that a lawyer, for example, can say, hey, I've got information on here, I'm a lawyer.
But if the information on the disk is self-incriminating, I can just say Fifth Amendment and never give out.
They can still get you for it. And even worse, if you get stopped at like customs coming in, they can just refuse your entry to the country if you're not from the country. And if you are from the country, they escort you straight to jail until you give them the key.
On a similar note, cell phones specifically, I know Apple, if you have a passcode on your cell phone, does not store your encryption keys, so even if they have a warrant, Apple can't help them. You have to either wipe the phone to get it working again, or you have to have the passcode.
I don't know if it's them or Google with the, they had something with the finger pattern thing where they could decrypt that.
Yeah.
And I know that they run into issues that.
Fourth Circuit said you can't. If there's like a pin pad or a pattern unlock, you would have to have a warrant to search that phone.
Yeah, so you have to have a warrant if there's a lock on it.
Right.
And Google will not give up keys if they're...
You can unlock your Android phone just by giving your Google account, but that also wipes
it. But, and again, that's when your forensic folk come in to come and pull data back off of what's been wiped. And that depends on where it was stored and how it was stored as to whether they can get it back or not.
Yeah, actually, he just covered my comment. I've kept up with some of the court cases in regards to trying to get people to give their keys and whether that's Fifth Amendment or not, and that really depends on the federal jurisdiction at this point, because some of the jurisdictions have different rulings that conflict with each other, and there's still been no Supreme Court case on that, so it's really depending on the jurisdiction you live in. Yes, I believe so.
And we're in the 6th or
11th.
We're in the 11th.
I don't know if they've had a court case come through that actually is relevant to that at high enough level.
But I do know in general, though, if they ask for it and you don't give it, they'll very happily toss your butt in jail until you do. Your lawyer will be very happy, too, because they can be protected. Your best bet there is simply to be someone who is in one of those positions that you don't have to give it out, like being a lawyer who's got an active case or... being someone with a financial office with financial documents, that sort of thing. There are certain folk who don't have to give those out, and sometimes the cops will just go, okay, go on through, or they're all right, we need to follow up with this, like, call the judge to verify that, what you're saying is true and whatnot. But that's about the only way that you can actually definitely get out of it, is being one of those categories.
Okay, so with all these really scary stories about almost a 1984-esque Big Brother situation that's going on, is there any way to live off the grid, or is it even feasible? I'm just wondering. Like, do you
it's
have any idea?
It's possible, but it depends what you want.
Out of life.
Right. So
medical
like
medical care, maybe.
If one of your requirements is I need to have internet, you can live off the grid. But, you know, if you're willing to go, you know, live somewhere out in the middle of the boonies, you know, grow your own food and whatnot, it's very possible to live off the grid. You just won't be interacting with a whole bunch of people. All right, nothing else? We've come to the end of the session.
What is that?
That's from the last session.
That's the way that a lawyer proves that programs are written things, because that's written and the computer analyzes the ones and zeros.
That they can actually copyright the binary.
It's a form of expression. It's written down. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you all, and give him a big round of applause.
Give blood. Please go give blood.